I want to talk about the simplification of a viewpoint. If we were to divide things into one of two categories, either love or not love, I think we can be a little bit more efficient in the way we process information. If I write love, all capital letters, L-O-V-E, and I write not love, all capital letters, N-O-T hyphen L-O-V-E, I think it makes it simpler for us to view what is going on and offer, and the energy that we are offering to any one situation, any one person, any one thing. It's clear to me personally that I tend to be judgmental about communications, much more so than, say, appearances or a person's doing this or something that they may have. So I'm more oriented to judgmentalness regarding communication rather than being, doing, or having. And so the question is, how did that occur? How did I get that orientation? And it seems pretty clear to me, upon a little bit of thought, is that I have early experiences of being the recipient of not love regarding communications. And consequently, I am sensitized to communication and not love and have static around that area and, in fact, tend to express not love in the area of communication about what I say, about what other people say, how they say it, what I should have said, could have said, would have said, that whole thing. And so that being judgmental, being willing or having the habit of expressing not love is really a fight response in the face of a threat. So if you can imagine a threat is perceived by us, in this case me, and I respond with fight or flight, well, in this case, being judgmental is a form of fight. And so that is a clue as to my habit patterns, my energy exchange patterns, which is a clue to the energy exchange experiences from earlier in my life, much earlier. And so that whole area of communication seems like a minefield to me. And so that's an area that needs to be and can be healed. And as I spend time thinking about that, delving into it, using energy techniques, the healing codes, emotional freedom technique, and so on, in an effort to resolve those issues, to balance those energies related to that, that whole field of communication to me is very interesting. Years ago, an astrologer, psychic kind of person, we're talking 30 or 40 years ago, said, I can see that you're a communicator. Well, I don't really know what that means other than having a desire to express, but I believe that to be true of all of us. Maybe I use my mouth and vocal cords and lips and teeth and tongue in order to express myself because there are other ways artistically that I'm not really talented. And I can't draw anything, can't paint anything, can't shape things with my hands. So maybe vocally is really the area of this energy expression that is easiest for me or that I'm more willing to do. And so being able to be more skillful at that, be more balanced at that, and recognize that my options are, as I express energy, are either to express them in the direction of love or to express them in the energy of not love. That's important. That's important to me, and I think it has potential importance to other people as well. If we are sensitized to perceiving threats from environmental signals in one form or another, somebody looks at us in a certain way, somebody says something to us in a certain way, somebody doesn't say something to us in a certain way, somebody acts in our direction physically in a certain way, we can perceive any one of those environmental signals as a threat, since it is information coming to us and we are processing it. And if we process it as love, that has a specific type of physiological outcome. we're going to be more relaxed, we're going to be more open, we're going to be more intelligent, we're going to be able to process the incoming environmental signals on a higher level than if we process those environmental signals as not love. If we process them as not love, that is, as a threat, we're going to be limited to one of two choices, either fight or flight. And now we've dumbed down. We're not as good as thinker as we were a moment ago, but we're a faster reactor. And we are going to react on a much more primitive level. We have changed the blood flow in our bodies. We've changed how our resources are being allocated from a broad-based use of energy in our bodies for long-term maintenance and sustenance and survival of the organism to one of a short-term urgent survival of the organism, which says big muscles in the arms and legs are going to get a disproportionate amount of energy, front part of the brain, much less so digestion, less so immune system, less so cell multiplication and growth, less so blood flow is not normal. It is shifted to protect the organism in this urgent condition. And so when we think of what we're doing to ourselves through the habit, the energy exchange pattern of processing environmental signals as not love, it really says to us the prescription we need for health and happiness and success and fun and longevity is going to be to shift the way we process environmental signals. So instead of processing them as not love, we can process them more as love. We interpret so many signals as coming to us that say to us, and they don't really say to us this, but we process them, we translate them, much like a receiver on a TV or a radio translates the received energy patterns or waves into either a picture or FM radio station music or AM radio station music or so on. So it is that whole area of our processing that is going to be the key to our health, happiness, and success. If you look at your physical condition, you can imagine how we process environmental signals. We do it with our ears. We do it with our eyes. We do it with our noses, right? Sense of sight, sense of hearing, sense of smell, sense of touch. We use our fingertips or skin or to do this. And so we have sense of taste and other senses. We have these feelings that allow us to process signals. If we have processed an information flow of not love through one of our senses more than another, that is, if we heard not love, it wouldn't be surprising to say our hearing may have been overloaded with energy at an early age, and that may be the reason we have hearing loss later in life. If we had an overload of energy flowing in this particular stream, that is, our sense of hearing, then we may be in a situation where we go, that's where my vulnerability was set in motion, and now I have a hearing difficulty, I have a sight difficulty, I have a whatever kind of difficulty. If we've overloaded that channel, our senses, then we could use that as an opportunity to put our focus on that and heal that experience of not love. There are lots of different ways to look at this whole area, the whole question of love or not love. As an early living being, we're really on the receiving end more than we are on the delivery end of love or not love. We're the recipients of what other people express. And if people expressed not love regarding our physical existence, our beingness, maybe we were inconvenient, maybe we were born out of wedlock, maybe we were conceived out of wedlock, maybe it was hard economic or emotional or physical or family times. So if not love is connected to our beingness, that is an area that can be healed. If our doingness or our identity, who we believe we are, racially, culturally, ethnically, language-wise, and there's a lot of negative energy, a lot of not love circulating in the air right now. I don't know what it would be like to be an immigrant at this point in American history, where all the immigrants, particularly those of Mexico or Latin America, are looked upon, or Mideast for that matter, are looked upon in such a negative light, in such a fear-filled light by the people who are doing the looking. So people are processing information and taking the immigrants as threats and blaming the immigrants for their fears, as compared to accepting responsibility of it. And so there's a lot of not love being directed at various racial groups, ethnic groups, national groups, and so on. And you can recognize by looking at the news or looking at the newspaper or just from current events that these conflicts of not love, one person or one group or one country bashes another with its version of not love, while the other one retaliates with their version of not love, really a very complicated and destructive way. And so if our not love experiences early on indicated to us that we were not okay, or that we didn't belong, we were not one. So if our okayness is distorted into a lie that we're not okay, or our oneness that we don't belong, we're not connected in our family or in our community or in our country or our world, that is a lie, but nonetheless can be believed by the average person, certainly the average youngster. Those things all can be healed. A client recently sent me an email speaking of her concern about her worrying about her daughters, late teenagers, early 20, two of them, and thinks that perhaps she got the start of this energy from her mother. She was born in Germany in 1948, this is the client, and this is obviously post-war, and I'm guessing that the family was Jewish, and the mother, pregnant with this child, had to walk miles every day seeking food in order to feed the family. And I have a sense of what that's like, not because I experienced it personally, but because my next-door neighbor was born in Germany and was 12 or 14 years old when World War II broke out, and has written a couple of autobiographies, which I have read, and she describes the post-war scrounging that the mother had to do for the family in order to keep the family together and alive, and it was amazingly intense. So I have a sense of that. So you can just imagine a person in 1948, Germany. Do you think there's any not love going on? There's got to be so much fear for survival. There's fear of what's taken place. The whole country has been devastated because of not love, both what it produced by itself and then the retaliation or the reaction of other countries, including the U.S. with its bombing, expressing not love on the country and civilians as well as military. There's no surprise to me how a person could become very worried about their child, even though they're now in the United States, 50 years later. And it is this attunement to not love. The antennae go up in an effort to protect ourselves from the vibration of not love. And why do we do that? Why do we do that? Well, if I say to you, we're going to go watch a boxer take a punch. They're in the ring, and watch this person. They're going to get hit with a punch. Punch to the body or punch to the head or something. And they continue fighting. The reason is because they're prepared. It's not a shocking event. But if a person were to be unprepared for a punch to the body or a punch to the head, like that boxer just received, it could be fatal, because the body couldn't protect itself because it didn't understand that this intense environmental signal was now going to arrive, and it was going to disturb the entire energetic balance of the body through this hit. and it could literally kill that person right on the spot. It is the shock, the unpreparedness for so many of the things that we've experienced is what causes their impact to be so deep into our bodies, into our minds, into our emotions, into our psyches, is because we weren't prepared for it. We were caught by surprise, and they were shocking to us. The trouble is, this preparedness, this worried so nothing shocks us, is attractive. It's magnetic. It literally aligns us and focuses us. It causes us to be creative and pull in the thing we are worrying about because that's what we're vibrating. So we vibrate with this particular worry, and then the thing that we're worried about is also vibrating at that, and that attraction pulls them together. That's exactly what we don't want to do. So anticipating bad news sounds like a good way to prevent being shocked, and it will. Unfortunately, it brings us to us. The better way is not to vibrate and not love, not to attune to not love, but to attune to love so that there is no punch that can reach us. There is no shock that can hit us because we're impervious to it. We vibrate on different levels, so we're actually untouchable with regard to that. I think it's safe to say that people who express not love on a regular basis have experienced not love. It doesn't make sense to me that we all of a sudden are all love, and then for no reason at all start to express not love. One of the reasons I have difficulty with the Bible is because of the descriptions of God in there sound so much like human beings at various points in their development that the characteristics of God coincidentally seem to mirror how people thought about themselves and how they acted. And so it is for that reason I'm challenged by taking it literally as the Word of God. But if you were to look at the Bible, I think you can notice that the whole concept of not love is legitimized in it. And it's legitimized by God's alleged behavior. When God is wrathful, right, he expresses not love to people, to cities, Sodom and Gomorrah, to people who turn them into salt. And even at one point, he's so filled and so expresses not love that he floods the entire planet. And the only people that are saved are Noah and his family and the animals that go onto the ark. He's expressing, or so the story goes, what I believe to be the power of not love when he is inducing Abraham to sacrifice his son. That seems so odd to me, so non-God, so not God, but nonetheless it's described as trying to ascertain the obedience of Abraham, where Abraham would be willing to murder his own son to please some invisible being or voice in his head or something. If you did that today, you'd be locked up in a mental institution, perhaps for the criminally insane. Fortunately, according to the story, Abraham's murder of his son was repealed. God called it off. Just trying to prove a point. One of the problems with that is this idea of sacrificing sons is so normal that we've got wars going on all over the world, a couple of large ones that we're involved in, that say it is okay to sacrifice sons in the expression of not love to other people who we make up the reasons for, or we've seen examples of their having expressed not love toward us. The war in Afghanistan started because one man expressed not love toward us, that is Osama bin Laden, and orchestrated the 9/11 World Trade Center catastrophe in Manhattan, as well as other events. And then we've engaged now for 9 or 10 years in this war that one man started. thousands upon thousands of people, U.S., Afghanistanis, Iraqis, soldiers from other countries, have died in this soup of not love that hasn't solved any problems that existed before the war started and going to exist after these wars are called off due to failure. Solving a problem with not love is not solving a problem. If we go back to, and from this time in our lives to earlier times in our lives, if we can distinguish ourselves from the not love experiences that we had and recognize that because parents, because other people express these vibrations to us, they express these words, these sights, these sounds, these behaviors, was more of an indication of their own view of themselves and how things needed to work and the emotional states that they had experienced and the not love experiences, frankly, that they had previously experienced themselves. And we can see that they are separate and distinct from us. And when we recognize that our parents were expressing this energy, not because of us, we happened to be participating at that point in our life, but they were really expressing stuff that was within them based upon their inventory of experiences. We were in the audience more than we were the cause of any of those behaviors. And if we can see that idea that their behaviors were as a result of these waves, if you will, these inflows, these influxes of not love that they would have experienced over the course of their lives, and we were seeing a manifestation of it, now all of a sudden we can make a distinction between us and those behaviors. When we know that these behaviors were due to what they had experienced, they were natural eruptions rather than volcanoes that we had caused, then we don't have to go into propitiation. We don't have to be angry about it. We don't have to experience shame or despair or loss. We can recognize that life was happening for them as well as for ourselves. In a superstitious environment, it's possible that a person standing on ground that is about to have an earthquake or is about to erupt in a volcano can interpret that physical reaction of the earth is due to something that they just did moments ago. Something they said, some thought they had, some feeling they expressed to another person or to God or to themselves, and they draw that correlation. Oh, I caused this effect, this earthquake, this volcano, by my action, my thought, my feeling, my expression. And that's the way superstitions are created. People connect cause and effect when there is no cause and effect. Step on the crack, break your mother's back. Step on an ant, it's going to rain. Those, you know, black cat walks across your path, and now you're bad luck. Break a mirror, 7 years, bad luck. Those sorts of things, the misconnection of one action and one effect, one cause, one effect, when they don't really exist. But we're looking, we're so sensitized to not love that we're trying to avoid provoking not love. Don't step there. Be careful there. Watch out for that. Because you don't want to experience not love. And we tend to hold ourselves back in tremendous extents by being afraid of things. Not knowing what causes not love causes us to, I don't know, what cause do I have to avoid? I don't know where this not love effect is coming from. When we start to make those connections, when we start to heal some of those previous interpretations, some of which we concluded on our own, some we were taught or trained, if you do this, you go to hell, and if you do this, you don't. If you do this, you bad stuff will happen. If you do this, good things will happen. And when you actually put those things to the test, they don't seem to hold water. But as little children, we're not really in a position, for most cases, to challenge that sort of authority. Somebody says, this cause produces this effect. It's like, okay. And I've mentioned previously on these Sunday talks that when I was 6 years old in catechism class, was the first time that I know of where I heard such bogus information that I had the great good fortune of crying about it and my mother straightening me out. I was told the effect was that my best friends, David, Harry, and Leroy, were going to hell. The cause? They weren't Catholic. My mother said, nonsense. That's not true. So I didn't sit with that information for very long, but it convinced me that when adults made statements, they needed to be really considered. They needed to be doubted. They needed to be challenged, because adults can say stuff that is not true. They can give you rules of cause and effect that are false and are unhappy, unhealthy, and to a little boy, potentially devastating. When we can look at expressions of not love from our parents, even from ourselves at this point in our lives, as being the natural result of energy inputs that have preceded this expression, and not see them as simply isolated bad things, is much easier to go into a state of compassion. We can see it as a natural outcome based upon the inputs. And so trying to stop the output or that outcome is not really the answer. There are not enough prisons. There are not enough wars. There are not enough laws. There are not enough chains to go around. It is so much better to modify, to change, to improve the inputs so that the expressions of not love are reduced early on as inputs. So if we can reduce the not love inputs, guess what? The not love outputs are automatically reduced. It's like saying to a farmer, if we plant less weeds, we're going to get less weeds in our crop. The farmer would look at us like we had two heads, and we go, you're just noticing this concept? You're just noticing this? This is so obvious. This is so standard and straightforward for us. We live by this. We live by this rule that we reap what we sow. We need to understand that in terms of the question, love or not love. I believe we have that choice in pretty much every situation. And because I'm using the model of love, not love, it is so simple to just assess where you are at any one point. When you look at something, what are you expressing? What are you offering? It's so much easier. Now, I'm a fan of complexity. The trouble is, it's complex. It's complicated. And some of it's not actionable. Even the 10 emotional states, while they seem easy, and if you're calm and peaceful, it's a very, very useful tool as far as I'm concerned. Shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, and peace. You can find yourself on that ladder in half a second. You can find somebody else on that ladder in a half a second, provided you're high enough up on the ladder. If you're low on the ladder, you can't notice it, and you won't even remember that there's a ladder. You'll just be in one of those lower emotional states, and you'll have the feelings and the attitude and the viewpoints that go along with it. Anger is not an intellectual place to be. Oh, that's why I'm really a good reasoner when I'm angry. No, you're not. No, you're not. None of us are. It's not designed to make us reasoners, thinkers. That's an awful place to be. We're reactors. We're fast. We're aggressive. And it's designed, in my language, as an emotion of stop. To stop something that's going on, or to stop something before it starts. But that's not thinking. It's reacting to the thing. I think we can look at what we offer. I happen to be standing in front of two pictures on the wall in a hotel meeting room, photographs taken by an artist and reproduced and sold to this hotel chain, and you can look at them. They're old, worn buoys hanging vertically on nylon ropes. What can you offer to this? What can you offer looking at these buoys? Because I grew up in a small town on the eastern end of Long Island in New York, I had water on both sides of my little village, Long Island Sound and the Peconic Bay. I have seen plenty of buoys in my life, and they represent salt water, fishermen, lobster traps, crab traps, all kinds of wonderful things. Salt water smell, swimming as a child, people making livings from the water. I can offer love to these pictures because of my inventory of information regarding buoys. Somebody else can look at these buoys and see their need for painting, their age, or even question this as art. But for somebody who's been near a seaport, it's much easier to muster feelings of love than it would be not love. Of course, if somebody had really negative experiences related to a seaport or buoys or fishing or something of this sort, then their inventory of not love would be accessed, and they would offer a different vibration to this. I think we could look at, if we wanted to do some deep investigation, look at the 12 worlds. That is, the spiritual world, the mental world, the emotional world, the physical world, the family world, the career world, the financial world, the social world, the leisure world, political world, community world, and maintenance world, and see what love experiences we've had, and also look at what not love experiences we've had. And if we've got not love experiences related to any one or more than one of these, it can have an impact on us because we can interpret it as a minefield. So let me just take a look at finances, financial world. That's a big deal for a lot of people on the planet right about now. Maybe it's always been. If we have experiences of not love related to the financial world, related to money that we've experienced, maybe we overheard somebody expressing not love regarding money issues. Maybe we've done things with money that if people knew about them, they would express not love to us. And maybe, regarding the area of money, we expressed not love, maybe to ourselves or, more likely, to other people. All of those things can impact our relationship with money today. And so you go, I want to have money. And very few people are going, no, I don't want to have money. So we do want to have money because it's very convenient. It's an energy form that is very convenient to have. Increases our mobility, increases our ability to communicate as well. So we want to have money. But if money is so laden with potential not love, it's like a ticking time bomb, perhaps. Or it's a pussycat saber-toothed tiger, but we don't know when it's going to turn into the saber-toothed tiger, and we don't know when it's going to turn into the pussycat. So we're tentative with it, we're frightened of it, we tend to hold back, we're very reserved with regard to that. And so these expressions that will produce money will tend to hold back, because money itself could be a bomb, could result in a lot of pain from this not love experience. So if we look at that and go, we may have a clue that what needs to be healed in our relationship with money or any one of the other worlds is, I believe in this order, the not love we expressed, the not love that we would experience if people really knew about us, the information that we were withholding about our thinking or feeling or our behaviors in the past. The third, the not love that we're afraid of. And fourth, and frankly, in my opinion, least significant, is the not love that we experienced regarding money. I think our own behaviors are the ones that most deeply affect us rather than what other people have done to us. It's what we have done to other people, in my opinion, that really needs to be forgiven more than what they've done to us. If we wanted to look at finances and say, I want to really heal my financial world, we will want to convert not love to love. So here are a couple of ideas. Number one, we were financial burdens to our parents and our family. Now, I believe parents volunteer to play that role, and I think we have agreements, and that's how we get born into a particular family. But nonetheless, in this physical, financial, emotional sense, it is challenging to add another child to the family, whether it's the first child or the 10th child. Each child is an additional challenge, so we were a burden to some degree. And so we, if you interpret it that way, we may have appeared as not love because we're a burden. If we, in our early childhood, took change off of dresses, out of pants pockets, out of wallets or purses, or out of glove compartments, and with the exception of money out of my mother's purse or wallet, certainly my father's pants, pocket, dresses, and glove compartments were the target of my pilfering, sometimes with the encouragement of an older brother, but nonetheless, that was the source of money. And I never knew whether it was known or not that I did that. I don't know if my father recognized that money was disappearing from his dresser or his pockets or glove compartment or what. But that, I wonder if he knows that he's got a criminal in the family, is something that I would withhold and hold myself back from. If incorrect change was given to us in a grocery store, for instance, and we kept it, that can impact us negatively. It is those kind of things that we will now hold ourselves back because we have connected not love to money, having the things we want, and so on. And that list can go on and on where we acquired something, stole a candy bar, chewing gum, whatever, whatever. And our ability to, because of our religious upbringing, to reconcile having money and having God, being financially well off and being spiritual. It's like, oh, no, I think you have to have one or the other. You're going to be rich or you're going to be good. One or the other. You can't have both. That kind of nonsense was preached to us as children in many cases, and it needs to be overcome, needs to be healed. And because we get so little training in the average family about how to handle money, when we do something wrong with it, we end up provoking wrath or unhappiness or disapproval or not love. And so now it's like, I don't know how to be effective with money. I don't know how to use money to increase the flow of love. I just need to avoid it because I'm only familiar with money and not love as a relationship. All of this stuff can be healed. And if we understood how to use money instead of stumbling into the misuse of money, it would be so much easier to love our overall effectiveness of using this energy so we can leverage good into not only our lives, our families' lives, but other people's lives as well. We can look at any area of our lives, identify the presence of love in the past and in the present, as well as the future expressions of love that we want. We can also look at the past, present, and the future of not love experiences. And if we can change, and we can, our viewpoints, the future experiences or expressions of not love can literally be reduced. So there's much less of that going on for us. We get tricked through the management of disapproval to think that applying not love makes a situation improve. It never has worked. It never has worked. It hasn't worked with humankind. It never has worked. To produce positive change, choose to apply love. And love is not necessarily this mushy-gushy, give everybody what they want, nobody has any responsibility. That's not love. That's not love. Having reasonable rules, having reasonable societal rules and processes and norms is a form of love. Having a structure in the household is a form of love. It brings order. So to produce positive change, choose to apply love to yourself first, to your family members, and to everyone you meet. It's very easy. It's very easy to identify just by consideration. What am I offering? You can feel the difference between offering love and offering not love. You can feel it in your body. You can feel it in your body. Everything changes when you offer love. Then you can watch what grows in your garden and in the garden of your family members and friends and other people on whom you direct your love. They're going to learn from your teaching, from your modeling, from your demonstration, not from your control, but from you demonstrating this use of love to make change in their lives, in the lives of their own families. We have that choice, love or not love. I would like to end the service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, the Creator in connection to all that is, the source of all love, help us to connect to you more and more in our thinking, in our viewing, in our hearing, and in our speaking. Help us to connect to love, to harmony, to closeness, to construction, to acceptance and peace, to fun and laughter and lightness. Help us to be aware that we have this opportunity to make these choices, love, not love, every moment, so we can stay in tune like a professional musician would desire to hit the correct note as he plays a particular song. We want to hit the right note when we place our attention and intention, our gaze, our hearing, our thoughts, or our speaking at any one object, person, condition. Guide us to recognize and to resonate with you, the vibration of all love. Thank you. It is so. Amen.